Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to kindly request to put your cell phones on silent, if you haven't already done so. And we'd like to begin with saying the one capital Tehillim. I ask Rabbi Sharpton to please lead us in Tehillim.
Shiram Alos Mimamakim Kosiko Adonai. Adonai Shema Bekali Tienos Nefakashivos Ukol Kachanunoi. Im avonos tishmor yo Adonai mi yamor. Ki im koas licho l'man tivarei. Ki disi Adonai kifso nafshi v'lidvorei ocholti. Nafshi Adonai, mi shomrim laboker, shomrim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki em Adonai hachesed v'hardeim ofidur. Who yifteres Yisrael mikol avonoso.
In memory of Dr. Shames, the Bnei Yeshiva have been learning and made a siyum on Seder Noshim. Rabbi Naiman, one of the Rashi Yeshiva, is representing the Bnei Torah with making the siyum. Rabbi Naiman, please.
The last Mishnah Kedushin reads, Rab Noroi Omer, Maniach Ani Ka'umios Shabogam. I will abandon all the different jobs, skilled works of the world, or different parnassas, any amlames ni al Torah. I will only teach my son Torah. Sh'odam ochel mischarav olam hazeh. Because when it comes to Torah, a person learns in osik in Torah, so he acquires, he fulfills, he lives, he deserves, and earns the schar in this world. Ya'keren kehemes olam haba. An actual keren, the principal amount, is just put away for him for olam haba. That's when it comes to Torah. Ushok umnios enon kain, but all other jobs are not like that. Kish adam bolidei choli, the person becomes sick, olidei zikna, or old age, olidei yisurim, or to other types of afflictions, hardships. Veino yachol lasak b'mlachta, when he can't go ahead and be involved in his mlacha. Harehu meis derot, he has absolutely nothing, he dies in poverty, in famine. Avla Torah enon kain. That was all with regard to other types of work. When it comes to Torah, someone's involved in Torah, the learning of Torah, the teaching of Torah, the performance of Torah. Ain't okay, it's not like that. Eva, Mishamarta, Mikorab, and Arusha, it watches him, protects him from all evil when he's young. Vinosanis, or Acharis, the Sikva, Biziknusa, and it provides for him hope for his old age. The Narusa Ma'oma, what does the Pasuk say about his youth? The Kovei Hashem Yachlifu Koach. Those that yearn for Hashem, or have faith in Hashem, will acquire strength. The Zeknusa Ma'oma, but when he becomes old, what does the Pasuk say about this person's involved in Torah? Old Nubim Beseva. He will be fruitful in his old age. Chenu Om, B'Avom Avinu, and so we find B'Avom Avinu, Ova Shalom, B'Avram Zokin, Avram is an old man, Hashem Rachis Avon Bakor, Hashem benched him with everything. So you see that he gets a tremendous amount, not just when he's young, when he's old, he's feeble, nevertheless Hashem provides for him. Matzinush Os Avraham Avinu as Kotel Kua. This was defined because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avraham Avinu rather, performed and was involved in Kotel Kua Achol Nitna, even before it was given, before it was taught. Nevertheless, he was Mekayim as Kotel Kua. Shnemar Ekev Ar Shashom as Avraham Bekoli, because Avraham listened to my voice, Vayishmo Mishmarti, he kept my commandments, his Rosai, Chukosai, his Rosai. Hadron Allah Seder Noshim, Hadron Allah. Daiton Allah Seder Noshim, Daitoch Alon. Vol Nisnashay Minoch Seder Noshim, Vol Nisnashay Minon, Vol Almo Habain, Vol Almo the Osei. Harav Noan, Oinu Stirrets Rosa, Befinu, Vem Chobe Israel, Nia Kuranu, Anastu Bessas, Einu Sassam Chobe Israel, Vane Vishomech, Vrom Deisar Osecho Shmo. Oi Vait Pichak Meini, Nisvosecho, Ki Olam Hiri. יהי ריבי סומן בחוקך ורומן ועבר שאורם רועשך פקודך כיבום חייסוני ברוך אתו אדוני ועמדין חוקך אומן 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 סר ובועד מאוד אני אופנך ונראים ועבורסינו ששם לחלק מיושב בית המדוש ועושם פה חלק מיושב קרונות שאני משכים והם משכים הם אני משכים דבר תורי והם משכים דבר מתהלם אני אומר והם המילם אני אומר מקב הסוחר והם המילם והם מקב מסוחר אני רוצה עם רוצים אין נוצן מובור שחס, ואני רוסו חי אורם הבא. שנמר ואת אלוהים, אלוהים תורידו מובור שחס, אנשי דום ומירמו, ויחס דמיין, וליח תחבוך. יוסי מפונך, ואני אוהב ואלו בסי, ושם שעזעתוני וסיים תדר נושם, כן תעזרני, לחסתי ומסכתו ספורם, אקרם וסיימו. לרמוד ורמיד, מסתוך חורחובו. לשמור ברסו, סוכיימס, כל דברי, חמוד תורסך וביעבו, וסחוס כלת הנועם, המורועם, וסמי חכמים, הנזכורם בסדר נושם ובכל הספורם שרומדתי ים עודרי וזרי וזר זרי שרצמוש התאו הקדוש מפי ומפי זרי וזר זרי מעט והאורם ויקויים בנו את מקרה שקוסו וזרחו תנך אוסח ושוח בכל תשמור עליך והכיסוסה היא תשיחך כי ביר בו יומך יוסיף בכל שנוס חיים אורך יום ימינה או שבכל בתשמורה ואיר זה מויתן אירוח נובע שרום
Brishus Rabbi Yeshiva, and by request of Mr. Shames and family, I'm just going to share a short personal thought. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, "Todinas chaverfa ashetakia ben plamo." Don't judge a fellow man until you are in his place. And the conventional interpretation is simple. How do you know how you would have reacted if you were in the same circumstances? Don't judge the other person. You haven't been there yet. The Meiri offers a very novel interpretation. He explains, literally, Ad Shatia bin Pomo. Don't judge him until you are in his place. Don't judge him when he's out in the street, out of his environment. Visit him in his home, in his residence. Visit him where his guard is down, where he's behaving naturally, and his true character comes out. Ladies and gentlemen, every Tuesday evening for 7 years straight, I had the opportunity, the privilege, to learn Torah with a group of gentlemen in the Shames home. And although far be it from me to judge anyone, and certainly far be it from me to judge Dr. Shames, Zichrono Livracha, but I saw firsthand that although generally we say what you see is not what you get, in this case, what you see was what you got. He attended the shiur as anyone else did. He sat around the table as did anyone else. In fact, there was one incident, probably about 3 or 4 years into the ongoing shiur, where there was someone who attended who hadn't been there before, the first time. After the shiur, he came over to me and he said, "By the way, who's the Baal HaBos in this house?" He didn't know that it was Dr. Shames' home. It's incredible, the humility, the realness that we saw week after week. And although perhaps if you see it once or twice, an incredible credit goes to the Shames family in general. Just picture this for a moment, ladies and gentlemen. Every Tuesday night, your house is transformed from a dining room to a base medrash for 7 years straight. But Dr. Shames attended, was there, just like anyone else. And there are many of those attendees here who can testify as well to the fact that you couldn't tell that Dr. Shames was the Baal HaBos. It is my hope, and I am sure that it's everybody's hope, that we can do our part in trying to emulate the lifestyle, the humility, the simpleness of this very special man. Yehi Zichro Baruch. Rabbi Henoch Teller is known as a lecturer far and wide. He's known as an author far and wide. In fact, after this evening is complete, his newest book will be on sale. And it's special because there is a special chapter in that book entitled The Life and Ways of Dr. Abe Shames. It is my honor to introduce Rabbi Henoch Teller.
Thank you very much. Brishus to Rosh Yeshiva, Shem's family, cherished colleagues, Mother Rabosai, and by all means, Rabbi Cohen should be speaking first. It was an unfortunate glitch that they put. This is just a warm up act. This is it. Chassidim make a big deal about the Yahrzeit. They dance, they serve schnapps. They sing. And as I understand it, the reason it's such a simcha is because a person is judged twice. Lachamei v'esrim, and then again on the earth side, what did they accomplish? And what was accomplished posthumously because of them? The analogy I think of is Rashi in his lifetime, he wrote an interpretation on Chumash, on Novi, on the entire Tanakh, on Shas. That was during his lifetime. And now comes his Yahrzeit, Rashi's Yahrzeit. He goes light years higher and higher in Shamayim, because we couldn't have left or right without Rashi. You think about Dr. Abe Shames, what he accomplished in his lifetime, which we'll touch upon, and then what is accomplished posthumously, and there's equal reason to celebrate. Because he was larger than life, we grope and we're flummoxed for a proper metaphor, how to describe him, how to articulate the greatness that was his. Of course, the very idea of greatness associated with Abe is something he would have found farcical. For he viewed himself as nothing more than the kid from Minnesota. He was great. But in my quest for the portrayal of greatness, one biblical narrative came to mind. And that's from Menachem Beis, the story of Elisha. Elisha, the disciple of Eliyahu Navi. And he came to Shunam, where he met a great woman, Isha Gedola. And this great woman took care of him, and she looked after others. And because Elisha was so appreciative, he wished to reward this Isha Gedola, this great woman, and he asked, what could he do on her behalf? And this astounded woman gave the amazing answer, if you want to help me, help the world. Elisha presses on, what can I do? How can I help? And she insists, don't forget that, Misha, what I told you. If you want to help me, go help everyone else. What makes someone great is not excluding himself from everyone else, not being elitist, to assume responsibility for everyone. Don't just give to me, give to everyone. And boy, did Abe have this in spades. His sense of responsibility was for everyone, particularly the deprived and the unfortunate. And that's precisely what the Navi calls great. No matter what his station was in life, no matter how much he succeeded, he never ever viewed himself for anything more than the kid from Minnesota. There's certain rules of human nature, such as power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. No matter how much you have, you want more. Money was a Messiah. And on the Mesbuchasitavos of the Yodo, Dr. Shane is constantly, dynamically, perpetually violated these axioms. When he reached a certain level, he realized that money was to be distributed, to be given to others. And his amount of giving was totally disproportionate to his means and his assets. Fundamentally, that's because he viewed himself as the kid from Minnesota. Popularity, success never changed that image. And just in case you don't follow what I'm saying, Flatbush is a hotshot place. Englewood is a hotshot place. LA is a hotshot place. It was all the Politan Minnesotans and the many of Politans that are here. Minnesota is not a hotshot place. God comes to Avraham Avinu that will make his name great, and Avraham is thwarted. Anochi Afarveif, and but dust and ashes. Anochi Afarveif is biblical. In the colloquial parlance, it means I'm the kid from Minnesota. After one full year, I'm sobered by the thought, what would Abe have accomplished in 1 year? How many smiles would he have brought to faces? How many downtrodden would he have uplifted? How many secret acts of benevolence would he have effected and afforded and executed? During the Second Lebanon War, Abe felt the pain of every resident of the north of Israel. He felt the pain of every soldier on the front. And not only did he feel their pain, he felt an overriding sense of responsibility. Directly after the war, he met a soldier in Beit El outside the Tefillin workshop. And he asked the soldier, what brings you here? And the soldier responded that when his unit was evacuated from Lebanon, they evacuated so expeditiously, there was neither the room, nor the place, nor the time to squeeze everything into the helicopter, and their backpacks remained on Lebanese soil, which meant abandoning his tefillin. And they were using Beit El at the tefillin workshop to acquire a new pair of tefillin. As soon as Abe heard this, he did one of his famous disappearing acts, and he informed his connection that he wanted the best tefillin for the soldier. And Abe was informed that the difference between what the soldier wanted and an upgrade would be significant enough. And Abe was unfazed. I want the best. The best batim, the best partios. And the man said, a total incredulity, this is a four-digit figure in excess. Didn't make a difference. This is what he wanted. This is what he insisted. And this is what he gave to this anonymous soldier whose name he never learned. And the soldier never knew his name as well. Whenever Abe detected a need, and he had an uncanny nose in this regard, he went into overdrive. He didn't make mental notes. He acted, he initiated, he completed. There's a term in English which is has a negative connotation, but I have no other word. The word is obsessed. That's probably the most accurate word to describe what he was for others. He was obsessed. As Dr. Jacobson noted, that other people's needs were Abe's emergencies. Abe was never part of that anything. He was never Yahtzee. He saw a need. He wasn't just through the act. He had to make sure that it was the person taken care of. He was remarkably unfocused upon himself. On his way to Israel, to his mother's Levaya, he brought equipment for Hatzalah. He was burdened with things for others. Chazal said, Tzadikim l'misasim k'ruim chayim, that tzaddikim, even when they pass in this world, they're still alive, because the essence of a person is to give to others. And one who keeps on giving never dies. They continue to lead. And Chazal say, Baruch Hashem Kemes, four categories are akin to being dead, and they are the leper, the blind man, the poor man, and the one who is not blessed with children. What do these four share in common? The essence of life is to give to others. And these four are handicapped in this regard. The leper, the metzora, is mechutz l'machne. He's distant from everyone else. He has no one to give to. The poor man doesn't have the means to give. The one who's not blessed with children, the major giving one gives is one to one's progeny. In this regard, he's handicapped. And the blind man is handicapped to give to others. We learn from this that the essence of life is to give. And the more you give, the more you live. The Medrash says, the Adam is osios ma'od, and Abe was a very person. He was ma'od. His spirit taught and touched everyone. I'm going to start new and then I'm going to spread further. And this is a very sensitive and touchy subject when you talk about children. For we all know, we don't talk about this much, but some people do everything possible to mess up their kids. They come out great. And some people try so hard and they're not successful. But of course we have to try. Hashem's children, they're sweet, they're spirited, they're fun-loving. But I don't think there's any children that I've ever met in my life that are so generous. And generosity is not an attribute you learn in school. You get that in the home. In Hashem's home, you got it in the milk. Of course, everything I say applies to Deborah as well. Not only the generosity, the sensitivity, the perceptivity, it's remarkable. It's a tribute to their parents. That was near. Now we go a little further. The Shem's mail carrier broke into tears of the passing of Abe. She wrote two letters of condolence. Mail carriers can deliver mail. I never saw a mail carrier write a letter. The garbage man began to cry. That point of grief upon Abe's passing was so sharp and so intergenerational that the children would bicker. He was my best friend. No, he's my best friend. No, he's my best friend. Now, adults, what's the difference between adults and children? Adults are embarrassed to say what kids think, what kids say. As adults are embarrassed to say, she sat in my seat and she got a bigger portion, but we think the same thing. And we're all thinking the same thing. He was my best friend. He was my best friend. At least that's what I felt. We just, as Rabbi Yachas mentioned, we just published a new book. It was released in Israel in early November. And one of the classes where I teach, When a girl heard that I wrote about Dr. Shames, she began to weep, and she hardly knew him. 2 weeks ago, I met a woman from Cleveland. I was at a conference in Stanford, and she said she read the articles I'd written about Dr. Shames in Jewish press. She said, "That's Shamus guy. He changed my life." We've attempted to capture in our portrayal of Dr. Shames, in our memorial tribute to the world according to Abe, because we want to try and provide a little payback to Abe. And how paytel can you provide payback to a man basking in the kisei kavod? This is the perennial question: how do you commemorate? I ask this question all the time. I'm a docent in Yad Vashem. In my tours, I ask the question: how do you commemorate 1.5 million children who perished at the hands of the Nazis? Museums can become mausoleums, and literature can become ephemeral gibberish, and statues and shards of pottery. But the most fitting tribute is to carry on the way of those who are no more. The Gemara says, "In the Chizkiyahu Melech died, and no one was more responsible for Torah learning from the world all the way to the south, the literature and the world intricacies of the most complicated Mishnayos. When he passed away, they didn't make a museum or a statue. Hoshiva Yeshiva Kibra, they established another yeshiva to perpetuate the learning." So the best way to pay back Abe is to do Abeisms. As simply as that. By incorporating the lessons. And here's a word of caution. If you think you can encapsulate his life into a symphony of chesed and maisim tovim, you're dead wrong. I'm going to mention one other aspect. There was no less part of him than to reach out to the downtrodden and to the unfortunate, those who were given a difficult blow in life, and that was his incredible yashrus, his erlichkeit, his integrity, and the remarkable kid Hashem that he was. By way of analogy, in the 1970s, the Detroit Free Press had a very strong bias that was pro-Israel. Detroit was a big city once, the 9th largest city in the United States. And why would a city with so many Arabs be so pro-Israel? The answer, I heard once from Rabbi Beryl Wein, was that the editor of the Detroit Free Press, his mother, an Irish immigrant, worked as a domestic in a religious home in Detroit, a Jewish home, and they're very kind to her. They liked her, she liked them. And they went away for Hanukkah vacation, and they returned on December 23rd. And this Irish woman thought, what's going to be? December 23rd of Yom Tov. They don't have a tree. And she thought, the poor people, where are they going to find a tree out of Yom Tov? And she went out and bought a tree with all the pitchfkes and the stockings. She decorated in the living room with a large bow window. And this is a frum neighborhood. They drive home December 23rd. There's a tree in the window. And the man walks in. He says to this woman, come with me. He brings her into the kitchen. He says, I cannot thank you enough. No one ever was so thoughtful. You were so sensitive, so considerate. I can't thank you enough. But we don't celebrate Christmas. The tree has to go. And they treated her with so much respect. Her son changed Detroit to pro-Israel bias. One other analogy, I have a good friend in Borough Park. And his house is being painted by a black painter. And they're removing all the paintings off the wall. And they removed the painting, a photograph of the Baba Rebbe. And the black man, the painter, said to my friend, is this your rabbi? No. He said, why not? Well, he's just a very famous rabbi around here. He said, but he's not your rabbi? No. And the black painter said, he's my rabbi. He pulled out his wallet and pulled out a photograph of the Baba Rebbe. He said, how do you... He said, I was painting his house. I arrived early in the morning. The first thing he asked me was, did you eat breakfast? I said, no. He sat me down, he served me, he waited upon me, and then he said, I want to speak to you. And I knew what he was going to say, because it's always the same schmooze. I'm paying you good money, I want a perfect job. And the rabbi said to me, we once had a perfect world. But since the temple was destroyed, the world isn't perfect. All I ask is you try your hardest. One person recommends to another, I got a lot of jobs in Brooklyn. I come in the morning, no one ever offered me breakfast. They tell me, I want a perfect job, and I tell them, you want a perfect job? The temple's destroyed. And if you think these are isolated, willy-nilly events, capriciously, I want to tell you, Dr. Abe Shames, that it's possible to change the world. Even if you come from modest beginnings, even if you're just a kid from Minnesota, you can leave the world a better place than you found it. And you'll say to me, look around, look at the newspapers, Ehrlichkeit, Kiddush Hashem, that's not exactly the strong suit of religious Jewry. But it's no reason to stop trying. And it's no reason to give up. We all owe this much. And I want to try and prove to you that the situation left for Lauren. I'll give you three quick examples. When I was a bachur, the age of the bachurim here in this room, Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, second Seder, there was a petrochemical layer in the Beis Medrash. Come the end of second Seder, there was a cloud level, yay thick, of smoke. The world changed. If you smoke today, you're a pariah. You have to stay outside in the cold in the winter, you know what that means over here. When it's summer out in the heat, you're outside. The world has changed. You don't smoke in a public place. Another friend brought to my attention that it used to be when we were kids, everybody spoke Lashon Hara. I know you don't know what that means, but... So nowadays, you may say, this may be Lashon Hara, but... at least you give that preambulatory comment. It wasn't that way years ago. Things have changed. My balabas, when I stay in New York, my balabas, his name is Pashkes, Hungarian Hasidic Jew, a sweet fellow. He's got a candy company. And this candy company caters to a very religious clientele. And there are more hefsherim on the products than there are ingredients. And it's unbelievable. Hefsherim have no, you know, no shatness. No kinlebe de rabbin in it. No, no, no shatness. Hefsher after hefsher. He told me, and he's just a few years older than me, and I'm only 27. He said that when he was a kid, on the candy bar, if you didn't see a picture of a pig, you ate it. Nowadays, you don't put things in your mouth without reading the ingredients. Things have changed. It's possible to change the world. There has to be a Kiddush Hashem imperative. And just reading about Abe, and by the way, all the proceeds from the sale of this book all go to the Chesed Avraham Zeid, the Dr. Abe Shames Foundation. Just reading about Dr. Shames can be the catalytic enzyme to change ourselves, to want a desire to improve. Now, the foundation was established not just to memorialize the man, but to perpetuate the virtues. And my decision to include the chapter was not capricious, was not whimsical, was not willy-nilly. It was not an attempt to fill a book. But it's fulfillment of the book entitled Too Beautiful. Whoever knew Dr. Shames knows what the word too beautiful means. But that's precisely what it was. It's beyond. It was just too beautiful. That was it. That was it. Okay. He's a papa. Rabbi Shaya Cohen has offered tremendous chizuk to many lost souls, and he has saved many from spiritual destruction. But this past year, he was a tremendous source of strength to the Shames family. It is my honor, tremendous source, to introduce Rabbi Shaya Cohen. Thank you.
Tuv.
Tell the truth, I'm a bit confused at this moment. Coming in this morning, I read the beautiful chapter that Chanuch Teller was referring to, holding back out of embarrassment, the tears in my eyes on the number of stories there, and thought that it would be a unique opportunity to appreciate the simplistic greatness of this giant of a human being, and try in the process to maybe bring us all a little bit closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam, in whose image he was obviously created, as we all were. Maybe it was more obvious on him, and try to inspire ourselves to emulate some of those unique and beautiful characteristics. And I was prepared, and a little bit uncharacteristically, even made some notes about this topic. I was going to share with you that this great man's life, and even that book which I envision, I haven't consulted with anybody, as a book that might just go out to every young teenager and to every parent and machanach, to learn how to act, how to live Kiddush Hashem, and how through a life, just actions and feelings and sensitivities, to set such an example that everyone will just crave to emulate, and in the process, connect the youth of our generation, connect their parents and their teachers with the Bnei Olam, with such a fierce connection that our world will, as we heard a few moments ago, change and be entirely different. And I thought that I remembered a conversation that I had about a year ago this time with a young man who had, I wouldn't say drifted off the deck, had with passion run away from Yiddishkeit, rejected in a measure of rejection that I don't think I have ever seen, and frankly I've seen it all. And such negativity, such anger, such venom. And in the conversation, I mentioned to this frustrated and agitated and venomous, I think that's the best word, young man, something about Rav Aryeh Levine. I used it as an example. And without skipping a beat, he says, "That's my favorite book." I said, "Look at that. An image of a human being who is human to the core, sensitive to the depths of his neshama, full of a life of chesed, of giving, of caring, of sharing, of willing to speak of the chesed, of pursuing chesed with a passion. Such a book, and the life of such a person, is the favorite book of somebody who wants to hear nothing ever again about Yiddishkeit." There's power in a life of chesed. There's power in a life of sensitivity. There's power in a life of human Kiddush Hashem that can break down and can affect and can find meaning and significance even in the most hardened and difficult rebel against everything that we consider holy. And when I thought about this book, and I thought about this chapter, and I thought about the life as I've read it and heard it a little bit, just the Me'at Mizeer of Dr. Shames, I realized that this is a most powerful tool to revolutionize so many people's attitudes towards Yiddishkeit, towards Shmiras HaMitzvahs, and towards the bringing in of himself. And I thought that maybe it would be appropriate to discuss this and elaborate on this a little bit this evening. But on the way back from the airport, Mrs. Shames was so gracious to pick us up, and I sort of got a directive together with a threat. The directive was, and I say it very openly, that this is a community, as unfortunately so many communities today, that's in pain. We have, you have, in a sense we all have, experienced some very difficult times in the last year, in the last month, and who knows how much more. And we need some chizuk. We need to find some source of strength and solace to encourage us and inspire us to be able to go on, and especially to be able to go on with a simchas achayim, as Dr. Shames was certainly the classic example of what it means to live the simchas achayim. And therefore, if maybe we could address some of the difficulties and the issues that we're facing. And then I was threatened and told, but if you claim that you know the answers, I'm taking you right back to the airport now. Now to me, what that meant was, Dr. Shames left a legacy that's beyond what meets the eye. A legacy of emunah and bitachon. A legacy of the power that lay on the belief, the ability to commit a life to chesed, to rachmanis, to sensitivity, to integrity, to caring and literally living for others. And underneath that all, I think, was the power. And that power was the Rebbeinu Shelem. That power was the Eved Levavos. It's all only about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That power is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and the tachlis of the world is chesed. His tachlis in creating us was to do chesed for us. And the tachlis that we have to fulfill in this world is to be Gaimelei. And this realization of this connection and this appreciation of this emuna and this bitochen and this simcha in that relationship and recognition of the depths of the chesed of the Bina Lelo gives a certain strength that says, yes, everybody needs chizuk, but they don't have to be answers to these questions. And maybe that the answers, if they're suggested, might even take away from the depth of yearning and craving to understand and connect with the Bnei Olam, and maybe to satisfy ourselves and think, okay, we gave a little bit of an answer, we took off the sharpness a little bit, now let's go on with our lives. So today I think that we talk here about an individual who left not just a legacy of chesed, but a legacy of emunah, a legacy of bitochen, and a living example of how we have to understand our own lives, and we have to understand the Bnei Olam. That having been said, I'm not quite sure what to do now. Maybe for a few moments, just to try to put life in a perspective, and then maybe to try to deal with some of the inspiration and the strength that we could gain from studying the life of this great human being. The Gemara says in the Sefer Smochos that Rabbi Akiva lost his son, Rabbi Shimon. And the Olam, thousands of people gathered in Tveria, to the Levaya. And Rabbi Akiva got up to be masked his son. And at the Hesped, he said some very strange things, the Gemara said. He said that your coming here to this Hesped today has given me consolation. And even had I buried 7 sons, I would be able to find today consolation. And then he continues, I don't think it's easy to bury 7 sons. But the fact that now I know whether it was cause, simon, or a sibah, or just the result, just indicates that my son is a ben olam haba, nichamteni. Now I have found solace, I have found comfort, because I am sure by your presence here that my son is a ben olam haba. It seems very strange for him to have to say, had I buried 7 children, and it seems very strange for him to have to tell them, well, if you think that you can get in the choma from 7 children, if you see me getting in the choma from 7 children, you might think it's easy to bury 7 children. It sounds like the choma is one of the greatest and most difficult tasks that we can achieve. The greater the loss, the greater the pain. The greater the loss, the greater the question. Such a loss, such a giant, such a human being. And it's so, so painful. And Rabbi Akiva says, it doesn't make any sense that I'm able to find consolation. But knowing that my son is a ben olam haba, that understanding that this world is a continuum, it begins at the beginning, and it continues forever. And our sojourn in this world, be it long or short in relative terms, in global terms, it's really very short anyway, is just a stage in that continuum of eternity. The neshama is on forever, and that's an eternal world. And that's the ultimate world, the world that Bnei Olam gives the ultimate chesed and schar for everything that we do in this world. And this is the world that Bnei Olam has a daily praise door. This is the whole way that leads us to that world. And that realization, that it's all connected, that it's all part of this eternity, that's the only source of strength, the only source of nechoma, because we know that the neshoma is eternal. And the truth of the matter is that for those who have suffered tragedy, and unfortunately so many of us have, we know that ultimately, if not for this realization, if not for the realization of the temporal nature of this existence and the eternal nature of the world in which we live, of the universe, of the neshoma, of the eternity, we wouldn't be able to handle it. But with that realization, we can find the home. But that realization makes it easier. But we still, we want to understand it. We don't understand it. It doesn't make sense. And there's a very interesting insight that you find, that we find in Sefer Iyov. Iyov was a book that was written about an individual who was a giant of a human being, a tzaddik of tzaddikim, who suffered the ultimate, suffered the loss of 10 children, suffered the loss of a phenomenal estate, wealth, suffered the loss of his health. And in this terribly broken and critical condition, he's trying to find some solace in his situation, and his friends are trying to bring some nechoma, and they go on for 32 prokim, and in Perek Lamed days, finally HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, Vayomer Hashem al Iyov, Eifo Hayisa B'Yosti Oretz, where were you, Iyov, when I created the world? What do you know about the totality of this continuum of eternal human existence? You weren't there at the beginning. You don't know anything about Mishomers. You don't know anything about Gilgula Mishomers. You don't know anything about all my Cheshbenis. In fact, probably if I would explain it to you, you wouldn't even get it. You know, it's just beyond human comprehension. And that, it seems, was an achoma for Eliyahu. However, the question is, the question begs, why wait 32 prokim to tell him the truth? It's beyond our comprehension. That's it. If we think we understand it, we should be taken back to the airport. It's beyond our comprehension. Why 32 prokim? And it seems that there's a critical need to attempt to understand. There's a human nature and a human need to try to make some sense out of suffering of this world. And it isn't evil, and it isn't wrong, and it isn't apikursis. It's normal humanity. And maybe it's only after we've attempted and tried to make some sense out of it all, at that moment, we're ready to hear the truth. At that moment, we're ready to recognize, like the Chassidish Rebbe said when they asked him why such things happened in the Holocaust. So he said to them, he says, I'll tell you frankly, you know, I'm an old man and I learned many years ago, I don't ask Hashem why. Because I'm afraid if I ask him why, he'll say, oh, you wonder why? Come on upstairs and I'll be glad to show you the whole panorama. You know, and I'm not quite ready to go yet. So, it's like, it's something that we can't really understand. But we can't really recognize and accept the fact that it's beyond our comprehension until we have tried to make some sense out of it all. And I wonder, surprisingly, and please forgive me, if in the life of a tzaddik, if in the short life of an amazingly accomplished tzaddik, it might not even become easier to understand what's going on up there, even though it might be in a long and plentiful years of someone who might not have accomplished as much. And I'm not only talking about the fact that Chazal tell us sometimes that there are people that accomplish their entire mission in a shorter lifetime. Because if that ever made sense about any human being that we know, it certainly makes sense about Dr. Shanks. One wonders how many people who live three times that with the best and freshest yugakrishis were able to accomplish a minuscule amount of that which he accomplished. So in that sense, it fits. I think it goes much more than that. And I think that if we have a sense of the depth of the lesson that we learn from this great life, then in many ways it may make it easier to understand. Not only can we say that we accomplished everything of a full lifetime in a short period of time, not only can we say that he certainly is in the eternal bliss of the closest proximity to the Kisei HaKavod, which should be the greatest source of Nechama. Not only can we declare very clearly that the ones that suffer are those that live here and continue on and feel the loss, but not this great Neshama whose reward and whose eternal bliss is something that's beyond our and beyond human comprehension. But maybe there's lessons there that can help us through life. In Tzadik Beis in Tehillim, Mizmor Shir Yom HaShavuos. So there's some very strange psukim that the Sipurim clarifies somewhat. It says the Ish Ba'al Yehudah Sila Yevnesos. Yifrach Rishon Kvayeshe, Yatsitzu Kol Ereyoven, Yishom Lamadayad. Foolish people don't understand the chesbonos of this world. That the wicked person has it easy. He has a lot of great reward in this world, and will be punished eternally for all the terrible things he did. And the tzaddik, I guess, by the inverse, is that he has it more difficult in this world, his difficulties, the extent, the time, the whole situation, each one according to his own matzav, and he has it greater in the next world. A fool can't understand this. And the question is, why not? Makes a lot of sense. If the world is eternal, if life is a continuum that starts at the beginning and goes on for eternity, and the neshama lives on forever, and this world, in its greatest rewards, doesn't have very much to offer, as most of us have learned by now, and yet the eternal world, where it will happen, there's the ultimate in terms of schar, in terms of anor, in terms of the amenities of Hashchina, in terms of dveikus Hashem. So it makes a lot of sense that tzaddik gets the punishment that he needs or the cleansing he needs in this world to be paid for his good deeds in the eternal currency, and the Russian gets paid in this world in a cheap currency for the little bit of good that he did in order to be really appropriately taken care of in the next world. Makes a lot of sense. The Teretz is, Teretz must be, the question isn't a logical question. Any question on the Bnei Yehuda is not a logical question. A human being, Shelsa Chavek, stands here and he says, I'm going to ask the Bnei Yehuda why he does what he does. What do you have in mind? What kind of question is it? Well, that's not logical. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. You're talking nonsense. You're asking after this goal. God, please justify what you do. It doesn't make sense to me. Sure, it doesn't make sense to you because you don't see very much. Your vision is myopic. You see this little world, which is a minuscule piece of eternity. Of course, you don't understand it. Like the famous motion they give about the tapestry. You know, upstairs there's this beautiful needlepoint, and from this side, where we see it from our perspective, just hanging threads randomly that look like they're all messed up. What's the question? The question is emotional. It's not logical. It isn't a logical question. How could it be that a great tzaddik has a short sojourn in this world? The logical answers are manifold, and the logic of the question is in reality not logical at all, because we don't ask such questions on the Rebbe Shalom. The answer is the question is emotional. It hurts. It's too vague. When we see the suffering of the tzaddik, when we see the confusion of this world, when we see what seems to be tzaddik v'ra'ah v'ra'ah of the third world, emotionally, just I can't. What am I supposed to do? I can't live like this. It doesn't sit well with me. So the Sifuna says the answer is at the end of that kapitel. Tzadik katomo yifroch ki erez balvunu yiske shesuli b'leis Hashem b'chatsri sevekeinu yafnichu. Study the life of the tzadik. Study the bountiful accomplishments of the tzadik. Study the blossoming of the tzaddik and the outpouring of his influence and his kindness and his benefit and his effect on the entire world around him. Or the moving the seder, and here of course it hurts, you know, when the tzaddik doesn't reach old age, but we just have to recognize that age is a very arbitrary determinant of life. Life can be lived to the fullest based on what's accomplished and what's done, and the legacy and the impact that's left over for future generations. Not to mention the ego to the seim shel tzadikim ma'isim tovim, the ma'isim tovim that a person leaves over. Lahavim, this all teaches us ki yoshel Hashem suri v'lo yavlosavoy. It teaches us that Hashem is straight. Yashrus, everything he does is right, is fair, is just, is kindness, is mercy. It's all in the divine persona of all of his midos. Surely he is my rock, and that refers to the rock in whom I take protection and I put my trust in him, as the pasuk says in Chazim Tzul Chosoyugoy. No avos, no kashis, No mistake. Nothing to complain about. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate in his goodness. But where did we learn that lesson? We learned that lesson from the life of a tzaddik. I would like to suggest that if we wish to find nechama in this tragedy, and maybe in so many of the other tragedies that befall our people, Rahman al-Islam, we have to look at the lives of these people. We have to look at one factor in their lives, their happiness, the way they live their life. But then, we have to look, and I'd like to suggest, at what might be the secret of their happiness. The Ramban tells us, we read it a few weeks ago, that when Vayikra Yitzchok esrivka oyel osoro vayehovero vayilokim Yitzchok acharei imoy. Yitzchok took Rivka into the tent of his mother Sora, and he loved her, and he found the chorma after the loss of his mother. And the Ramban says that what's the smichus, the hemshif between El Oyel Soro Vayehovero, he loved her and he found the chorma. He says he found his consolation, his nechoma, his solace in the love that he gave to his wife in the giving. Strange. I would have said that if he's finding consolation for the loss of his mother, then the love that his wife gives him should be the substitute and the consolation for the loss of his mother. Because his mother gave him so much love, and now he has a wife to love him, now we can find consolation. And yet the Ramban points out through, based on the posuk Vayehovero Vayinochem, that no, it's the giving of the love that brings to nechoma, that brings to solace, that brings to happiness. I would like to suggest that if we have an image before us of a great human being who exemplified the midas hachesed, giving with the depths of his neshama, with the depths of his sensitivity and brilliance, with the depths of his caring for someone else, and a happy human being. I mean, I was in the house a couple hours this afternoon. I don't know. It's still a happy place. It's a happy place to be. Yes, it's a happy, but the happiness that he implanted in that house is still there. I'm not talking about some of the pictures or some of the artifacts, you know what I mean? But that, and where did that come from? That came from giving. It was about when you give, you're happy. So it was that chesed that was the source of that effervescent and exuberant happiness, which was the maybe the defining image of that Hashem's when you saw him, when you met him. But I think it goes much further. I think he can be the source of our connection with the Rebbeinu Shalom. And please allow me to explain. The Gaon writes in Mishlei that the Iker, Nesilas HaTorah LeYisrael, was Kedei Sheyiftachu B'Hashem. The eager of the giving of the Torah to Klal Yisrael, the midah hamuhulmono mikol hamidos, is the midah of bitochon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And many speak about that, how the yisod of everything is that the ability to trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not to worry about anything, not to question anything, not to be shaken by anything, not to be overwhelmed by the difficulties of life, trusting HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He does provide, that He will provide, that He's constantly providing, that He's Pesach Es Yodechu U'masbi'a L'chol Chai, but not just L'chol Chai, but even according to His Rotzon, His Chesed is infinite. The Midas HaBitochon requires an insight, an understanding of the Chesed Hashem and the Rachmanis of Hashem and the tzedek, the tzedek, all of the Midas HaTovah and giving that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has, in order for us to count on Him and rely on Him and take refuge in Him and find solace in our relationship with Him in the midst of all of the problems that we have. I would like to suggest that Dr. Shames,
was maybe the greatest example of how we can appreciate the Bo'ir Yoyim. When you see human chesed, that's lahadi ki yosho Hashem tzurik le'atlosah. Because the Talmud says that when we see chesed from human beings, we also have to come to realize that all of this chesed comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we see the image of a Baal chesed, we can begin to say, you know something? If a human being can be so morally chesed, borachamim, hatova, and sensitivity, and love, and caring, and giving, think of the Baruch Shalom, in whose image he was clearly forged. I don't mean forged, formed. You know what I mean? It's not forging. And in whose image he was created, and in whose image he lives and exemplifies, the master of Baruch Shalom, Han Boko. Now we can have Bitochem. Now we can have Bitochem. Because we have such an example. And I believe that that example, and the example of others, the example of people in this community too, who have such an emunah pshita in the Rebbeinu Shalom, and such a Bitochem on the level, as the Mephoshim explained, on the highest level, that to them they don't think about whether it's going to be good or bad, whether I'm going to get what I want or not, whether I'm going to make it or not. Because everything is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and everything Hashem does is for the good, and therefore whatever He gives me, I'm capable of taking. Those examples can be the greatest source of chizuk to all of us. And they can provide us with the ability to have bitochem. If we can derive from this tragic episode in the lives of this wonderful family and this beautiful community the ability to ponder what we might not have pondered. We might not have thought about this for many, many years to come. You know, about the lessons. We might not have seen the godliness in a Dr. James. We just saw the goodness. But if we have a vehicle to see the godliness, then that godliness can truly be a source of inspiration, can be a chizuk in our emunah, not something that interferes with it. Can be an answer to questions that I wouldn't have to go back to the airport for. Because it's not answering anything. It's explaining how to continue living and where to find that strength. And I think that just as Yitzchok found solace in the love that he gave to his wife in the giving, I think that the power of Bitochem, the power of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not really giving, but seems it's considered giving. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows us to feel, as the Pshat Rashi says in David Ivan Iloi, this is who calls Rochav Le'otova Elohim Eni. And so forth. But Shmuel, who allows us, doesn't have any tzorchim. We don't do him anything. He allows us to feel as if we're paying him back, so that we feel more reciprocity in the relationship. If we can feel that close relationship with the Bo'ir Yoyim, if we can look at a human being who was the center of chesed in his community, in our world, which seems so bereft of so many good qualities. And if we can recognize that if he is only following the image of his creator, how much more so the creator has in his arsenal of chesed. And we can connect with that chesed. We can feel strength. We can feel solace. We can feel courage. We can feel true bitochem for the future. And it can give us the strength to be able to continue, to be able to be able to live our lives and elevate ourselves and constantly give us happiness in the schus that we are giving. Because as was mentioned before, that the maisim tovim that we do in this world elevate the neshama of the individual who was responsible for them. And I think that we heard from the Chaim Fetella a beautiful perspective. Not only the acts that Dr. Shames performed in this world,
But the influence that they have on all of us, on future generations, on everyone who's going to read that book, that chapter, those stories, those insights, on people who might be so distant from Yiddishkeit that they never want to hear anything about it again, but they'll take that book in their hand and they'll say, this is my favorite book. And not only that, to get back to my friend, I want to tell you where he's holding in the world. I told someone recently, I said, a year ago, when I met him, he was fighting the Melchemes HaYetzer. And it's a year later, he's fighting the same Melchama with the Yetzer Hora. But a year ago, he was rooting for the Yetzer Hora. And now he's rooting for the Yetzer Tov. And that's all the difference. We can win these battles if we have such examples. If we can mold ourselves after such human giants and emulate to some slight extent the chasodim that they do, then they can in turn be an inspiration for us to bring great nachas ruach to their neshama, and that would be a tremendous chus we are giving them to elevate us in a world which unfortunately today is so decadent, and to give us strength and courage. Rebbeinu Shel Olam should provide to this community, to this wonderful Shem's family, and to all of Klal Yisrael, the nechomos that we need to sustain ourselves despite the difficulties of our lives, and the yeshuos that we truly crave, and to rely that kirishuosko kivino kolayoyim, we should be zeicher to strengthen ourselves in our bitochon, that the life of Dr. Shane should be forever an inspiration in recognizing the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and allowing us to put our trust in Him. And in that chus, we should be zeicher to every call, meaning the meitav, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless us with the removal of difficulty and suffering, with refuahs and yeshuahs, lonu l'chol Yisrael, yehi zichro baruch.
As was mentioned quickly by Rabbi Teller, and as you see in the brochures and your seats, Shavi's family has decided to begin a foundation with Zech and Ishmoso, Chesed from Zev. Just 2 months ago, the foundation has been on the way already. Tonight we are officially inaugurating. 2 months ago, a few days before Sukkot, it came to our attention that someone in the community's car had broken down. And the choice that they had to make was repairing the car so they can get to the workplace, or food for yantif. Imagine the agonizing decision that person needed to make. It is obvious that we cannot duplicate the actions of Dr. Shane, but we can try to imitate them. We ask you, please help us in continuing this legacy. I want to take this opportunity on behalf of the Shem's family to thank the yeshiva, the B'nai Yeshiva, all those involved in facilitating this evening, particularly Osha, whose feet were on the ground for many days in making sure that everything is taken care of. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to call upon the Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Binyamin Levan, for a special message.
We heard how Dr. Shames fulfilled the mitzvah of Yahavta L'Re'acha Kamocha, to love every Jew, person, a soldier who didn't even know his name, a tremendous love and chesed. But the Chazal say, they learn out from the word Re'acha, that besides the mitzvah of loving every single Jew, there's an extra mitzvah to love one's immediate family. An added dimension one is obligated to have an added feeling of love. And I can say with great, in a sense, simcha, that we in Yeshiva were zayecha to be part of that family. Yeshiva, Taras Chaim, Taras Emes, and especially the Rabbein, all felt part of his immediate family. And we felt that we enjoyed that special love, that we were on his mind literally 24/7. He literally lived for the yeshiva. And K'nai upon him, just as he loved us, we loved him. And in order to perhaps try and preserve as much as possible that special relationship, the yeshiva has decided on at least attempting two things. First, we have printed a sefer. Sefer on the Sefer's Kedushin, which includes many of the shiurim that were said here in the yeshiva. We printed it, the Ilui Nishmat, Dr. Shane's. And the second, we hope will cement and preserve the relationship forever. We have decided to rename the Yeshiva High School, that from now on it should be known as Yeshiva Taras Chaim Shane's High School. There is Hashem, we will have some form of dedication.
We thank the special guests who have come in to speak to us and the inspiration that we've received. Everyone is invited for Maariv and refreshments. Thank you very much.